Hello, and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight Latino Voices. I'm Joanna Hernandez. Here's what we're looking at. Three migrant shelters are set to close next month. A look at what comes next. Residents in Pilsen remain divided over a plan some say could lead to more gentrification.
It's a lot of history in the photos, a lot of love.
And capturing life in a historic Chicago neighborhood in the 1990s. And now to some of today's top stories. It's a high-stakes meeting tonight for the Chicago Board of Education. Board members are set to consider a resolution from Chicago Public Schools CEO Pedro Martinez to not close any public schools before 2027. This as Martinez recently came under fire for acknowledging a compiled list of schools that could be closed as part of a five-year plan for the district. Tonight's board meeting is also the first since Mayor Brandon Johnson called for the CEO's resignation, which Martinez rejected. The mayor was asked about that rift ahead of the meeting.
Well, this is really, not about discussing personnel issues, and I've said that repeatedly. Yeah, well, what families want to know is that the mayor of Chicago is still committed to transforming our public school systems.
The meeting kicked off at 5 p.m. Check out our website for more on how this back and forth is playing out. A new behavioral clinic is opening up for underserved Southsiders. Elected officials and leaders from Ada S. McKinley Community Services celebrated the clinic's grand opening today at Insight Hospital, formerly known as Mercy Hospital. It's expected to serve up to 250 people each week. The clinic has a range of services, including therapy and case management, youth programs, and a 24/7 mobile crisis response.
Mental health is now considered a healthcare issue. We've been doing it for 100 years, but to be inside of a hospital and partnering, bringing our community resources and the add back access to the community that we serve has been critical in our decision.
The city's public health department estimates more than 65% of Black and Latino residents with serious mental health issues are not getting treatment. And a new workforce hub on the near South Side aims to provide hundreds of jobs to Chicagoans. Local leaders joined the ribbon cutting for the new Hire 360 training in Business Development Center. Officials say it will connect people with a range of careers from clean energy and retail to care work. The center hopes to provide opportunities to young people on the south and west sides of the city. The kid from Englewood who became an NBA superstar for his home team is now retiring. Derrick Rose made the announcement today that he's retiring after a 16-year career in the NBA. Rose was drafted by the Bulls as the number one overall pick in 2008 and became the youngest MVP in league history at 22 years old. But a knee injury forced him to miss nearly two full seasons. Rose went on to play for other teams, including the New York Knicks, before finishing last season with the Memphis Grizzlies. The Bulls made sure to give Rose his flowers today, thanking him on social media. Up next, housing new arrivals with fewer city shelters. Stay with us.
Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
Migrant shelters are set to close later next month in Pilsen, West Loop, and Hyde Park. The closures come as the city plans to spend less than $141 million on migrant care that is budgeted. People who still need assistance will be offered space in one of the 14 shelters the city plans to keep open. Here to talk more about what is to come next is Maria Campos, Director of Community Wellness and Support Services at Erie Neighborhood House. We also reached out to the city to send a representative, but they declined. Now, Maria, thank you for joining us. I want to start off. Erie House has been supporting families in different city shelters. Tell me how the partnership is now with those shelters.
We have been, as you mentioned, Erie has been working very diligently. I want to say that our efforts started back in 2022. And throughout this time, we have seen a lot of changes, right, that come with the climate itself. I want to say that our relationship, at least with our collaborators, that in this case may be ICER, New Life Centers, and the Housing Authority, it is a collective effort. What I've seen is improvements on always wanting to create that positive change and improve the support system that we have built within the shelter system, which, as you know, is not easy. Welcoming a new family that has undergone a lot of trauma is not easy. Being constantly myself speaking from working on a day-to-day basis with our case managers and housing counselors is not easy, because we have to continue to reassess the crisis intervention techniques that we are providing, and at the same time we have to evaluate how do we better support our social workers that are carrying this work on a daily basis.
And you talked about improvements. Would you say there has been a shift in efforts on specific services provided?
Yes. There has been efforts in, for one, acknowledging that there is a big need for behavioral health. There's also a big push for housing stabilization services. And lastly, just the general access for public benefits.
And we know that at one point the Area House once partnered with the Pilsen Shelter, one of the shelters
yes.
set to close, and now you work with the American Islamic College.
Yes.
What's the capacity over there?
The capacity itself is 1,300. However, we're not at capacity. Right now, I believe we're anywhere between 500, 600.
And how would you say these shelter closures would affect your work?
You know, it's an interesting space right now, because initially we've heard that there may be some families that were being transitioned from the smaller shelters into the American Islamic. However, we don't know. We don't know right now. Perhaps in a few days we may have a better answer for you. But right now what we intended is to make sure that these individuals and all these families were moved over into American Islamic just to continue receiving comprehensive services.
And you've been on the forefront of helping, you know, hundreds of asylum seekers. Were you surprised about the closures of these shelters? You know, what were your thoughts?
Not surprised, unfortunately, because we have been seeing this. You know, we started with a long list of shelters, hard to remember all of them, right? I don't know if at some point we had over 28 shelters. I know that the city of Chicago has been slowly trying to centralize their efforts. And with that, we have trying to minimize any misinformation that may be out there. For one, because I'll say that when we had a long list of shelters, it was difficult to really share correctly resources, because we had to continuously say, well, this is the agency that is allocated to your shelter. And a lot of times families didn't fully understand why is it that if they had made it already to the doors of Erie House, we were still now telling them, redirecting them, right?
And on top of the people who weren't at city shelters, I mean, there was
yes.
many other smaller organizations
yes.
helping people as well.
Correct. So we had a lot of individuals that were, for one, concerned that we were creating additional barriers that were truly unnecessary to the access. And so I know that part of those efforts, you know, that yes, it can sound concerning that there may be some closures, but there is some good intentionality around centralizing and making sure that there is a quicker response to the family needs.
That was going to be my next question. Should families be concerned with these closures? But you're basically saying that this could centralize and help.
It can improve. It can improve. It can minimize the time frame that it takes for people to access the services.
And those who still need assistance will be moved to one of the other 14 shelters across
Correct.
The city. What will that increased capacity be for Erie House, would you say?
Like I said, we're unfortunately in a rough space right now. We have heard initially that could look like anywhere between 200, 300, right? However, the shelter will still not be at full capacity, which means that the families that are entering the shelter will still be very well accommodated and will receive, you know, great access to all the services. So when it comes to an exact number, unfortunately, I don't have that for you.
No, I understand. And with this recent development, what would you say the city should focus on when it comes to the migrant care now?
Trauma-informed care. I think that there is a big need for behavioral health. As mentioned, We have constantly been operating in just providing crisis intervention services, curating the immediate needs of the families, identifying that immediate support that it's needed. A lot of the family members that we receive are undergoing a lot of trauma that they underwent throughout their journey. And so we try our best to immediately provide those needs, whether that may be that they are here without clothing, without a way to really communicate back home that they made it here safe. And so we have been removing slowly those barriers to make sure that they feel comfortable and safe at the shelter.
And also on top of that, being able to move to residential housing, correct?
Correct. Up to June 30th, Erie House was taking part of the ASRAP, which is a program through the Illinois Housing Opportunity, at which we were providing support for the Asylum Seeking Emergency Rental Program. And we had been just providing that technical support that was much needed for families to gain access to emergency funding that could potentially stabilize them anywhere between 3 to 6 months. So we are very proud that there were a lot of families that were able to exit the shelter.
A really big effort there.
Correct.
We're going to have to leave it at that, but thank you, Maria. Our thanks to Maria Campos. Up next, gentrification concerns in Pilsen. We hear from residents right after this. Chicago City Council is holding off on expanding Pilsen's tax increment financing, or TIF district. Alder people voted last week to shelve the divisive proposal until next month. Supporters think the plan could help tackle economic challenges that they say are slowing down development. But opponents fear further gentrification would push out long-standing residents. Joining us now to discuss this topic is David Herrera, a former aldermanic candidate and lifelong Pilsen resident. Father Brendan Curran with Resurrection Project, Lucia Moya, Chief of Staff for the 25th Ward, and Alderman Byron Sicho Lopez, and Pilsen resident Diego Morales. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. I know this topic, there's different opinions. Lucia, I want to start with you. Let's start with the big question. What is TIF? How can you simplify? Because I know it could be confusing.
Yeah. Of course, so definitely. So I'll do my best to simplify it as much. But TIF is a tax increment finance tool that is utilized within a certain MAP district to divert a tax from the property tax bill that's paid to be able to go into this fund. And then that fund is utilized to be a tool within that mapped area that the tax is being diverted to.
And how would you say Pilsen's TIF benefited or has affected the community?
So I would say over the last 5 years, the Pilsen community has seen a full public benefit, especially under Alderman Sicho Lopez since 2019. His usage of the industrial TIF as it exists has been 100% within schools, within parks, within affordable housing. So it reflects his alignment on why his proposal is to go more into the residential area.
And Father, you support the proposal. Why?
We support it. First of all, I represent the Pilsen Preservation Collective. It's over 25 organizations, church, faith, communities, and stakeholders who see this as an opportune moment to stop some of the bleeding in our residential community and assist us with some tough infrastructural expenses that an ordinary budget, an ordinary year, can simply not tackle, like school building construction improvements, like opportunities for repairing the local library, for opportunity for some of the local residents, repair the roof, fix the porch, and repair the sidewalks, the vaulted sidewalks and lead pipes in Pilsen are some of the oldest aging structures through all the city of Chicago. It's a win-win to help pay it forward for the next generation.
And David, I want to go to you. You've talked about the potential risk of displacement of longtime residents if the expansion occurs, and Pilsen has already seen massive changes in recent years. You are against the expansion. How would you say that, you know, what is your mindset on why are you against
this proposal? Yeah, the TIFs historically have not worked, actually. There's a lot of data behind it. A lot of there was a TIF enacted in 1998 in Pilsen. It was supposed to sunset in 2022, meaning to expire. Collected nearly $300 million. Well, where did that money go, right? If we did an audit, when we do know through porting, it's what they do is they transfer the money from one neighborhood to another. A lot of money went to Lincoln Yards. It's yet to be built. A lot of money went to the 78, those $700 million. Those $2 billion in TIF was awarded to those two projects. If you go there now, we haven't broken ground. Meanwhile, you've got taxes of these people have been paying for it since 1998 and haven't seen the benefits. So at the end of the day, I'm against any and all TIF. It really diverts money from the city's general fund. And from there, that's what the city pays for schools, parks, low-income housing. And to be honest, from a housing perspective, that's the job of CHA. And, you know, we're a large city, right? This should be dealt with a city budget, part of the negotiations, versus creating these TIF fiefdoms, because what it does is it raises everyone's taxes across the entire city. And we just really need to abolish all the TIFs. They haven't worked. Actually, there was $3 billion at the end of the beginning of this year in the TIF on all the city TIF funds. And this year alone was a record $1.3 billion. We're facing a $1 billion deficit in 2025. If we abolished all the TIFs tomorrow and that $1.3 billion hit the city general account, we would actually be in a surplus, right? So now next year, it creates more deficits within the city budget, right? And then that increases our taxes. And then rents go up, and then people get displaced.
I want to bring Diego in. You're a resident of Pilsen as well. What's your take on the expansion?
You know, we were skeptical at first. You know, we know that there's been a long history, especially under previous administrations, of using the TIF in ways that we would not agree with. But I think the reality is that we're in a new political era. You know, the dailies do not run the city anymore. Madigan doesn't run the state anymore. And you look at the data of what the TIF has actually been used for in Pilsen, and it's exactly what David had mentioned. It's been used on schools. It's been used on parks. It's been used on affordable housing. And you look at what's happening in Pilsen. Pilsen was hit with the highest property tax increases in the entire city by a wide margin. About 47% was the average increase. And that's way higher than number two. And so what we're saying is, and that's driven not by whatever the city is doing, it's being driven by the private real estate investment that's occurring. You look at the Cook County Assessor data, it's also the sales price of homes are also inflating at the same rate. There's the highest inflation of sales prices in the city as well. It's not a coincidence that that's happening at the same time people have the highest property tax bills. So if you're going to be collecting all this money from the neighborhood, why not use it for our benefit and use our own money to determine how we want development to occur in our neighborhood?
Why do you think there's such a divide?
I think that because of the historic misuse under previous administrations, people had mentioned Lincoln Yards and others under the previous mayoralship. But the thing is, this is a different time, this is a different place. And you look at what the Pilsen TIF is actually used for. You look at the language, and this is really about housing. This is about giving people an affordable place to live. And we can determine that with our own tax dollars.
And Lucia, the proposal has already been delayed to next month. What needs to happen in that time to make it happen and be less divisive, as the word that's been used?
Right. I mean, so our office over the summer and over the last 14 months, we've been hosting different TIF engagements, different roundtables. They've been really tailored to the engagements on informing folks what is a TIF. I think at the beginning of this, our office ensured that we would go through surveys on folks' understanding around the TIF itself. And what we found was that more than half of the folks who attended our TIF sessions did not understand what is a TIF and how the tax diversion occurs. And so first, it's really assisting our community and understanding that the accessibility to funds, folks are always asking, what happens to our property taxes? Where do they go? TIF, historically across the city, perhaps, and has been used in a way that has been hurtful, especially in Black and Brown communities. But what this proposal is looking at is exactly what Diego is stating. It was not through the eligibility of blighted. It was through eligibility for conservation. So what that means is that the conservation makes it a focus on preservation. Preservation to Alderman Cicha Lopez is that affordable housing, low-income housing, access to full funding of our schools, of our parks, utilities, home repair grants. So all of these programs in alignment to the tools that don't exist and are really not laid out from the state,
from the city. So you're saying there's voices there.
Right.
David, I want to go to you. What are people saying in the neighborhood?
Well, the reality is that we've been burned with TIFs in Chicago. They were implemented by Harold Washington in 84, whenever he was 83. And, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing again and expecting a different outcome. And that's essentially what they admitted to. The reality is it sets a bad precedent because now this alderman wants a TIF, and those things last for 23 years. It's a biblical generation, right? And the districts change, the wards change, and then now the next alderman wants his TIF for his pet projects. They all want TIFs. So there's less money going to the city for police, for school. What do? They raise the taxes. The money's there. It's a slush fund. They called it the mayor's slush fund. And this thing about we're in the new era of progress, you know, Lori Lightfoot gave that money to Lincoln Yards. That was just 5 years ago.
So you're saying you don't believe that?
I don't buy it, right? Look at historical, look at the track record. If they did an audit of the Pilsen TIF the last 23 years from 98 to 2022 when it expired, show me the audit. Where did the money go? I guarantee you a lot of that money left Pilsen to downtown. If they want the money, claw it back, go to those private developments, get it back. Why are they giving away this money and it's going to other neighborhoods? That's what happened at Lincoln Yards. They took the adjacent TIF money, they moved it. That's what happened at the 78, the $700 million.
I want to bring the father in. What are your thoughts?
I think it's really important for us to remember that there are over 100 TIFs active in Chicago today. That this is a myth. This is not about stopping and starting a TIF. It's about a continuing TIF that, unfortunately, the residential community in that area of the Near West Side is watching from a distance and not able to take advantage of an important resource. If we do not pass this amendment, we will see over 90 units sitting out there of affordable housing we need. There's over 100,000 units that are needed, and we need that help today.
I know this is an ongoing conversation, so I'm sure we're going to keep going with this conversation, but thank you all. Up next, remembering the Pilsen of the past, but first, a look at the weather. A photo collection at the Harold Washington Library is giving a glimpse into what life was like for Latinos in Chicago during the 1990s. At that time, Japanese photographer Akito Sura was a student at Columbia College when a class assignment brought him to the Pilsen neighborhood. After graduating, he left the United States, taking those photos with him. But years later, he took a chance and reconnected with his subjects. Now he's back in the city, revisiting the people and places he visited all those years ago.
So, there's an image here that Akito shot where it's clearly raining a lot. And you can see the entrance of San Procopio Church, which is across the street. It's probably one of the iconic.
It's a beautiful shot.
So Akito started posting his photos back in 2014, I think. And people started seeing their cousins, their parents. And so it sort of spread through social media.
I left United States in 1994. Couldn't say properly goodbye to the many people. I thought this is a chance that I can reconnect to show these people and show my appreciations. But I didn't expect too much because I have no contact between the people for the long years. So I was kind of afraid the reaction.
It was perfect. So.
A few years later, he was out here. He's brought out here by several groups. He did a show of his work. They laid out the photos, and people can come and do interviews, talk about any memories from the photos, or see if they knew anybody in the images, too.
Now, I can tell you from the bottom of my heart that your pictures have brought so much love. You captured pictures that a lot of people would not be able to have done it. Some people didn't have a camera. Some people might have not had money for film, or they just didn't think so, but the pictures that you captured are so much full of love because these are beautiful memories that we probably would have never seen.
New construction, so you could tell that no longer has the canopy, and then the next two homes right there. Then you got the alley and then the huge corner building right there.
Oh, that's cute.
That's so cute.
It's interesting to see how much the neighborhood has changed and hasn't changed. But definitely, you know, gentrification has changed the neighborhood a bit. But it's a lot of history in the photos, a lot of love. And it's just, I hope people can see all that and see that the love that Akito had for Chicago and the residents of Pilsen.
Like him, Mario said, he said to me, thank you for carefully watching the neighborhood. Thank you for carefully watching our life. How can I say? It's the biggest... biggest happiness, yeah, I could ever have received.
One, two, three, Akito! Let's go!
For more information on the exhibit, visit our website. And that's our show for this Thursday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:37 and 10 for the weekend review. And now, from all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Joan Hernandez. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe. Buenas noches.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to give back to its community in Chicago and beyond.